coming to you from Orange County, California. This is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here. Another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. Joined, as always, pretty much always, by my co-host, Maximilian Montana. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. I'm doing well.
I wish that Maximilian was your real name.
It's not, no.
Maximus?
Just Max. Straight. Just three letters.
What was it before you did all the front squat maxes?
Minimum.
Minimum.
Minimum Ada.
Minimum Montana. And so we are just 2 weeks away as we record this from 2019. And, you know, with New Year's resolutions and New Year, New Me upon us, we want to talk to you about some of our goals for Juggernaut in the coming year. Goals, business goals, sportsman goals, you know, just kind of
relationship goals, life goals.
Yeah, just things that we're looking to do with the company and through the company in this next year. So just before we get into that, Max, do you have anything that you do with your athletes in terms of goal setting?
You know, with some of them, not everybody, some of them I try to sit down and talk about, like, not so much particular numbers, because I think that giving people number goals can kind of backfire, but I do talk about, like, expectations as, like, a, you know, what are you putting as an expectation for yourself, for training, for this and that. And so one of the big ones is habits for me, and something I've tried to get a lot of lifters to do this year is much better record keeping and logging of their workouts, because that's something that's really made a big difference for me, is keeping track of, you know, numbers and, you know, what was done, makes, misses, percentages, those kind of things, and getting people into that, in addition to logging, you know, the intangible stuff, like, you know, how are you doing with your sleep schedule? How are you doing with your nutrition? How is your adherence to, you know, actually communicating what workouts were for you to me and to other people on the team? So that's definitely something in terms of, like, goal setting, is to try and get people to really do that stuff better.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, is a very important idea for athletes to understand as they go about setting training goals, and it can extend to some of the other stuff we're going to talk about as well, is that it needs to be, you know, tangible in some way, and a measurable thing. It's one thing to say, I want to get better at the snatch, and yeah, I guess that means, like, kilos on the bar, but setting more specifically measurable goals, I think, is very valuable. You know, I got to spend a lot of time, or not a lot of time, but some very quality time back in, man, like, it's over, it's probably 12, 13 years ago now, with De La Salle football.
Yeah.
And my last 2 weeks as a student at Berkeley, I drove over from Berkeley to Concord for De La Salle's first couple weeks of spring football. And, you know, if you're not familiar with De La Salle, they won 151 straight high school football games, 12 years straight undefeated. In doing that, they, you know, beat many of the best teams in the country, and very often beat teams that on paper physically seemed like they were far superior to them.
Yeah.
That De La Salle, you know, though they definitely had some star athletes, Maurice Jones-Drew, DJ Williams, people like that, you know, they were also beating the Long Beach Polys of the world, who had, you know, five-star guys on their team, and all these 300-pound linemen, and they were doing it with 200-pound linemen and, you know, technique and hard work and all that kind of stuff. And a big part of their success I think, was their team culture, and part of that was goal setting and accountability to those goals. They did these things they call accountability cards, where every week they had a pregame meeting or beginning of the week meeting, and they would write down on an index card one goal for practice, one goal for the weight room, one goal for the game, and then they would say, I commit whatever the goals are, read them out. I commit to Max to do these things this week. And they made the point to me that like the practice goals particularly had to be things that were measurable. The idea of I'm gonna try really hard in practice, or I'm gonna have better practices is so nebulous. Like, how could that ever be measured? But they would do things like, I commit to stay 15 minutes after practice to do extra work on, my pass block footwork, things like that, that were specifically measurable, so you could tell, did I do it? Did I not do it? Your accountability partner, your sponsor would hold you accountable to that. And that always kind of stayed with me. So something to keep in mind for the athletes listening in regards to their own goal setting. Make sure that it's measurable and that you're creating a plan of action to reach it. So let's start off with that, the competition goals, I guess, that you and I have as coaches. This is going to be a very big year, particularly in regards to Olympic qualifying for weightlifting. So, what are some of the goals you have for your weightlifters this year?
Well, the biggest one is just making sure that for the athletes that we are at the right competitions and performing 100% at the most important competitions. And probably a minor goal in that is me understanding what the fuck the actual qualifying events are, but. More important than that is
just when he says being at the right competitions, he does not mean like there is a competition in ballroom A and ballroom B and we got to make sure we go in the right one.
Yeah,
it's, and you've heard us talk about this, is the incredibly complex labyrinth of Olympic qualifying for Alyssa.
Yes.
That there's bronze level and silver level and gold level and multipliers and different robies and all these things. So it is a complicated system to know which competitions are best, are going to best serve her in her qualifying quest.
Yeah. And there's obviously some other folks in there, and maybe some new folks that'll be joining that group, shortly. Depends on, what they need as well. But, the big one is like, it's not just like, oh, we have to be here at this meet. It's more a matter of, okay, is shooting for the absolute best total at this meet and kind of sacrificing the longer preparation worthwhile? And I think we saw that this year with Alyssa. Was we really made a bold move in going to the American Open final. But next year, establishing exactly how that's going to be, what meets they are, and really setting forth on a long-term plan and executing that with the intent that, hey, this is the total we're going to hit at this meet. This is the total we're going to hit at that meet. And then, everything in between there is set up. So from a weightlifting perspective, from the top down, the Olympic potentials, that's our goal with them. From the perspective of the people, in the next tier of competing, folks that we have on the team that are shooting for national champion status and national medals, our goal is bring a really solid group of people to those meets, to nationals, and place as high as possible, under the assumption that, we're going to have our best meet ever to do that. So, those are the kind of tiers. And then obviously below that, it's, the goal is always the same for weightlifting and powerlifting. I think, there's never a change. It's lift the most weight you possibly can at the right meet at the right time. But there is a strategy to it, is in that, how are you going to train for it? How are you going to peak for it? So, with those guys, each tier, we have exact meets we're shooting for, exact ideas in the sense that we're training for those things a certain way, and then just executing on that.
I know we all have goals to hit, whether it's eating healthier or exercising more, and sometimes it can be hard to achieve all these goals while struggling with other aspects of life. There's an app that I highly recommend to help you hit those goals a bit easier. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is the only app that takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes so you can read or listen to them. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of books quickly without reading the entire book. With the audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish 4 books a day just while you're on the go. 8 million people use Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library for self-help, business, health, to history books. I like Blinkist because just while I'm cooking breakfast or something, I can get 15 minutes quick information in. Maybe I'm just driving around running errands. And so it's so easy to enhance your day, enhance your knowledge in short bursts throughout the day. I've read 7 Habits of Highly Effective People on there, one of my favorites. They got tons of health and nutrition books like Sleep Revolution on there. So right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer for our Jug Life audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Jug Life to start your 7-day free trial. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/Jug Life to start your 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/Jug Life.
Yeah, you know, on the powerlifting side, I think we're set up for a very exciting year because of the performance at USAPL Nationals, mm-hmm. where we had 3 ladies bring home the open championships: Marissa in the 52s, Meg in the 57s, and Kristen in the 72s. You know, knock on wood, we have 3 ladies headed to IPF Worlds. I guess that doesn't become official for a couple more weeks, but you'll definitely hear about it if something happens there. There'll be a podcast, at least one. So we have a very unique opportunity there to. I'd have to go back and look, and maybe it's happened, but in the couple of years that we've been going to Worlds, this will be the 4th time I've been there coaching Marissa. I don't think that there's been any one group, one team that's had that many on the on the open team.
Many people from one team on the open team?
Not that comes to mind, really. Like,
and Team Juggernaut's bringing 3 of.
Three of seven women.
That's pretty solid. It's a solid showing in the open division.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely been, I'm sure, RTS, TSA, who coached so many, and like Joey, who coached so many lifters in the USAPL, that they've had juniors and sub-juniors and masters and all that kind of stuff. But as far as the open ones, the adult, the real ones,
the adult ones.
Yeah, I don't know that there's been 3. So that's gonna be a very exciting time for us to go over there to Sweden in June, and definitely come back with at least 3 medalists, but have the potential to come back with 3 champions. So that would be a very special thing. In the vein of not making the goal strictly numbers, the goal is to win.
Never gonna deny the fact that winning is extremely important.
Yeah. You can have all the feel good speeches and it's just me against me. Well, no, actually, when you go to Worlds, it's you against everyone else.
So. What is the quote? Winning isn't everything, it's the only thing?
Yeah. So we're going to win. We're going to lift whatever numbers are necessary to do that. But I think our goal there as coaches, and Max coaches Meg Scanlon, is to just ensure the smoothest, most well-organized preparation for that, to make sure we're showing up to the meet as healthy as possible, in body and mind, so that those three women can do what they're capable of. Because what the best that they're capable of is definitely good enough to bring home some. If I know anything about IPF Worlds, to bring home some very thin, poorly made medals. And in fact, they might be.
They also have a cheap ribbon too. So
yeah, they might be yogurt. They might be yogurt lids. It might be like the Office Olympics. Oh, yeah. The gold yogurt lid, the silver yogurt lid, and the blue one, which is just the backside of the gold.
Right.
Just don't flip it over.
Yeah, don't flip it.
So that'll be an exciting thing. You know, for other the kind of primary lifters I coach, like Brandon Allen, Andy Huang, you know, they're going to have the biggest competitions in the world, like they've had the last few years, U.S. Open. Big dogs, you know, Andy is, it's definitely time for him to go over 1,000 kilos in sleeves.
He moved to low bar squatting recently.
We've been giving that a try the last few weeks. I think it'll go well for him. And, you know, his back is obviously very, very strong, as most people's back who can deadlift 850 are. so he should benefit from that. It'll just become kind of a balancing act, I think, of keeping his arms healthy enough, because his bench isn't, they're not a great bench. So we don't want low bar squatting to take away from that,
but,
yeah. To keep balancing that and just for him to put it all together, you know, he'll have meets where it's a good squat and a good bench and not a great deadlift, or, you know, some other combination of one or two of the lifts being good and the third one not being quite where we want it. And it's tough when your goals are so high of, you know, biggest total ever, all time world record total, like it's pretty tough to get that done on less than like 8 for 9 kind of days, you know, maybe seven for nine kind of days. So, and the line becomes so much, you know, the target becomes so much more precise when the numbers get bigger and bigger. You have to have your best day, and 97% of your best sometimes just doesn't get it done when the goals are so lofty. So that's something we're just keep trying to hone in for him. You know, Brandon definitely has unfinished business at both the U.S. Open and Big Dogs meets that he had. The winning deadlift in his hands, above his knees.
Yeah, that was impressive.
In both of them, you know, if someone was to win both the U.S. Open and Big Dogs in the same year, which has not been done, you know, we're on the, I guess on the third, or there's been three of both of them, Big Dogs three and three U.S. Opens. Though the first one was not at the same caliber, but it's been different people winning them all. You know, Milanichev on Big Dogs, and then Peter Petras and Belkin winning the U.S. Opens, and Brandon could go and win both of them, and I think it would be a very difficult thing to argue against at that point if a year from now he's U.S. Open and Big Dogs champion in 2019, that he's not the best powerlifter in the world. Even if it's not with the all-time world record total or something like that, winning the biggest meets makes you the best lifter in a sport that's about competition, not just about numbers. So
that's something that so I've seen you over your career change your not necessarily change your philosophy, but maybe kind of modify the way you apply your philosophy, because I think you understood even a long time ago about the importance of long-term planning and long-term development, but actually watching you apply it where you had some meets where it was like, you know, compete, and or years where it was compete, the quote-unquote off-season or time off between those meets was maybe didn't apply the best kind of training there. And you have said before that you felt like the taking more off-season type training between those big meets. How much do you think, I mean, obviously it's important, but how much do you think your perspective on handling lifters like, I mean, someone like Marissa and someone like Brandon Allen, and, you know, for myself, someone like Alyssa and Meg, like these people are, we're looking to have the absolute best performance at one particular event, and that may be one or two events in a year. How much more have you found that you've got to adapt or sort of really just take into account much longer periods of training time and that process of like, let me sit down and like look at like 8 months of training here and not necessarily writing out sets and reps that far out, but really like establishing, okay, here's what the general plan is for the whole year.
Yeah. You know, for Marissa going into nationals, we had talked about that we're already planning to not do the Arnold.
Right.
And by the time I landed back in Southern California from Spokane, you know, I had in the notes of my phone, all right, 38 weeks to Worlds. We're going to split it up with like 6 to 8 weeks of this type of work, 6 to 8 weeks of this type of work. You know, that's going to put us 18 weeks out or whatever, you know, 16 to 18 weeks out. Then we'll go into hypertrophy, then our meet preparation. So definitely had it in my mind to take one step back to be able to take two or three steps forward. And because that's if I have a real regret of my own lifting or a real mistake that I think I made, it was not doing that. And yeah, it's easier to give advice in some of these situations than it is to take your own advice. So that's been a significant thing. Yeah, Brandon and Andy are both and Kristen, all four of them are in kind of a similar situation with that right now, where they're doing stuff that isn't in the short term impacting how much weight they can lift, but in the long term should be beneficial. And I think it's, you know, I get to have a unique perspective that probably only a couple other coaches might be able to have, that I've done these highest level competitions as a lifter and now as a coach. So I think that gives some unique perspective that at least I can kind of look back at it. And it's been cool to see these last couple of years. I mean, since we got a lot more involved in the USAPL, I mean, it's always been evident there that competition is the head-to-head competition is the most significant thing there. Where up until these last couple of years and the advent of meets like US Open and Big Dogs, Pro Raw type of stuff, that head-to-head competition was not the value of big time untested lifting.
Right.
It was just the biggest number possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. You probably won by 400 pounds or 500 pounds and you could take whatever the fuck kind of jumps you wanted. Yeah. And you know, if you went four for nine, so be it. You still won the meet, but that's not really what it was about. It was because there was no other competition.
Yeah.
It was just about these huge numbers and having to make the huge numbers when there's, you know, one other person going for huge numbers or 10 other people, 20 other people that like there is at US Open, you know, or 10 other guys like there is at Big Dogs, it adds a whole new element, for the lifter, for the coach, the strategy of it, the psychology of the lifter. So it's made it a lot more fun and hopefully it keeps trending that way.
Yeah.
You know, so I think our next big goal, you know, for me, certainly with powerlifting and being able to bring these ideas to the masses that is ongoing now, but 2019 will be really when it starts coming to fruition is the continued development of our AI system. You know, we put several hundred, Garrett, maybe thousands of hours of work into what we're doing there. You know, we're aiming for this for mobile app release in early 2019. Hopefully around March or so, and it'll have so many improvements over what we've got right now in terms of the way that it can select weights, track athletes' PRs and progress and projected PRs.
The three Ps.
In all of their exercise and exercise variations, being able to operate there on its own server is just going to give it so much more power in regards to that I'm very, very excited about its potential. Another P.
The five Ps.
Yeah.
Because power. I think, and then the sixth P, pterodactyls. It's a dinosaur. Kids love them. I think what is really cool about the AI thing, and obviously, yeah, it sounds like a sales pitch and whatever, and it's, I'm biased, but the thing that makes it super unique is that it is a systematized version of Chad's brain and Chad's programming, all his logic, but with a big group of people, you have lots of data to collect, and it's not just I wrote this template, do it. Everyone does it. They all find the same mistakes with the template, but no one ever does anything with that information. Now you've got a system that you can actually draw data out of, use that data to further refine the system and create better and better and more refined versions of the same system. I think personally that's the best possible case scenario that a coach can have, because you're going to have a system that in 3 years, the AI system, the AI programming from Juggernaut is going to be 3 years more advanced than it was 3 years ago, right? You have this totally refined thing, and it might be just lots of subtle changes, but the accuracy and the quality of it will be better and better and better, and new ideas can be implemented. So I think it's really cool that you now have this vehicle which you can draw data on and use that, because that's something that, and maybe a goal for 2019, that's something that I see as a huge goal for me, is to actually use, you know, data that I'm gathering from athletes' logs and athletes to create and help augment the programming I do, not just have a foundation of understanding and develop each program individually, but have, hey, look at these trends we see. Look at this information. How can we use that?
Yeah, you know, the other day I was working on an outline for a video about specificity in regards to sport performance, and part of that was transfer of training and special exercise selection. So I got to looking, you know, or re-looking at Bondarchuk type of stuff, and they have these dynamic correspondence tables, you know, basically talking about how predictive of sport performance different exercises are for different levels of athlete. And you know, I've been critical a lot of times of a lot of like American sports science research, saying that it's not done with athletes of high enough qualification,
yeah,
nor over a long enough period of time. When you compare them particularly to the gold standard of you know, sport performance research, these dynamic correspondence tables from Bondarchuk, because of the way the Soviet system was structured and he was at the top of that for the throws, it got to be these longitudinal studies of the same athletes in a lot of cases as they progressed from, you know, 10-year-olds up to international master of sport in the shot put and hammer and discus and javelin. So you got to see what exercises were important to them and showed high transfer when they were younger and when they were more developed. And by studying athletes, these studies are over a very long period of time, like 25 years.
Yeah.
And when you're studying people who are really high level, you get to take out a lot of the variables that could make the data less useful. Because if an international master of sport in the hammer throw, you know his technique is good. So you know his technique is great. So technical changes to the throw aren't going to be what's changing his sport result significantly. You know that because of the structure of the Soviet system, that they went from, you know, the sports school to the junior coaches to the senior coaches to the higher senior coaches or the highest in Bondarchuk. But Bondarchuk was creating the framework that all the other training happened in. So you know that their training history was pretty similar. So you get to eliminate a huge variable there. But you know, to make this long story a bit shorter, you got real information from a huge pool of data to really say these are the exercises that mattered the most to these athletes being successful. And he revolutionized the world of track and field coaching and sport performance coaching with that information, being able to take people like Yuri Sadik and Sergei Litvinov and be like, you know what, they don't need to clean and snatch and squat that much to throw the hammer 80 meters.
Yeah.
Here's what they are, and they don't need to do that when they're at the 80-meter level. Is developing that stuff when they're younger more useful? Certainly. But as they got higher and higher and the special strength exercises came into play more, that's the kind of information they were able to take from that. And right now, there's about 1,600 people using our AI system, and it's only, you know, it's almost seven weeks into the beta. But when we're having this conversation a year from now, and there's, you know, 5,000-ish probably people who have used it by that point, and some of them will have an entire year of data on, and then the year after that we'll have 2 years of data on some of the people, and so on and so forth. Our ability to say these are the performances that matter, you know, are the people who are getting great at 10 reps, how's that transferring to their meet performance?
Yeah.
Or is it the people doing 5 reps? Or is it you know, how did this group of people's pause squats improve? Did people whose pause squat improve a lot, is that what's correlating or causing bigger meet results? Or how does the front, you know, how does people's front squat improvement carry over to their low bar back squat improvement, and so on and so forth, and get a lot of really valuable data that I think is going to make huge impacts on our coaching, certainly, but
yeah,
but probably on everyone's coaching would be the goal. So, you know, we'll have the powerlifting coaching and power building shortly to come after that. And now Max and Garrett are working on the weightlifting and side of things, and then the super total will follow that. So, you know, what are you thinking about the weightlifting side of it?
I'm really excited into it. I'm super excited for that. You know, talking to Garrett was really awesome. You know, I mean, I don't think there'll be any kind of issues actually getting it to work really, really well. And I think that a lot of building it is a cool process for me, and you probably feel the same, because it really challenges you as a coach to answer questions that you wouldn't ask yourself normally, you know? And then also I try to do things where I figure out a solution, right? I sort through the process I have. And then once I get to that process, I do it in reverse and see if that changes the way I think about it. You know, I try to look at the same issue, two different perspectives to see, you know, how much of that is just me, you know, basing decisions on experience versus can these decisions be made, you know, can be based on, you know, logical questions, you know, if then statements and stuff. I'm really excited for the data collection for weightlifting, because that'll be a humongous piece to draw a lot of improvements in the coaching process and the programming process for me, just because having that many data points is going to be, you know, it's gonna be really cool. And it will really help solidify, you know, better training and better use of, you know, people's time, you know?
Yeah, and there's more existing research in weightlifting, you know, whether it's about ratios of one lift to the other or stuff like Prilipin's chart, but a lot of it's old. A lot of it's from a different system, you know, people in different circumstances than than the people who are going to be using the AI. So it'll be interesting to compare those, and yeah, they're not going to be all international masters of sport using it, but but there will be a lot of valuable stuff to get out of that for, and it'll probably be a lot more applicable really to the overwhelming majority of population of people interested in improving in weightlifting.
Yes, yeah.
Who aren't very similar to international masters of sport from the Soviet Union,
right,
in 1978.
Yeah, yeah. I see that stuff as like, it's like standing on the shoulders of giants, right? You see the patterns, you understand the principles of training, you understand how those principles were turned into a system there in Russia. And then you say, okay, I'm going to stand on this information as a foundation for building our version of this and how it's going to apply to, you know, American lifters.
Yeah. And then I think something that I really enjoyed about the creation of the AI system, and it helped me in creating my book, The Powerlifting Program Design Manual, is that every answer, every decision I made,
yeah,
in those programs had to be justifiable. I had to be able to say, I put this many sets and this many reps for this reason, and because this data tells me to. And when you're just writing a program, you can make decisions without having to justify them. So it was just an interesting exercise for me as a coach, as a content creator, as an educator, to really have to look at myself in making all these decisions and say, hey, is this the right decision? Do you have the right reasons for making this decision? And part of it was in an effort to preemptive effort of knowing, like, people are gonna,
yeah,
you know, What if someone looks at this and says, well, why did you do it like this? I can't just say, because that's the fucking way that I did it, you know, because that's how it's always been done. Like, I never want to give that answer. So I was very mindful of that in the creation process. Like, if someone could ask about any aspect of this, and I will be able to give the answer.
Some programs don't do any of that.
And the and I think that kind of takes us into the last point for me, at least, of goals for this upcoming year. You know, we're coaches, we create the content, and my real effort in creating so much of that content is to better educate and help coaches, athletes who are coaching themselves, understand what they're doing, why they're doing it better, so mm-hmm. they can continue to improve. And, you know, this is, the training has been something I've been extremely interested in really since I started doing it at about 14 years old. I'm 32 now, and for the large majority of time since 14, I wrote my own program. With the exception of about 1 year, 1.5 years in college, and then some time working with Josh Bryant early in my powerlifting career. Otherwise, I was making the decisions for my own training. And, you know, when I was 14 and started doing this, and it was 2000, there wasn't a lot of information available at all. So I was scouring the internet, you know, I asked Jeeves or whatever I had to do back then to get some information, and some of it was good and some of it was bad, and I trained hard and learned and made adjustments, and then I could get more information, and some of it was good and some of it was bad as time went on. But one of my great, you know, frustrations, I guess, as I got to be 22, 23 in the time that I started Juggernaut, was a lot of the information I had gotten to that point, I guess, wasn't what I thought it was, or I had a much different perspective about it. You know, I don't have formal education in this. My degree is in history. I very purposefully didn't get a training, coaching related degree, because I didn't think that it was worth getting. I didn't think they were going to teach it the right way. at the school that I was at, and which I think was fair, because I did do some independent study stuff and write papers for some of those professors, and they were like, well, this is like the best one we've ever gotten. And I was like, well, yeah, that's because you didn't teach it to me. but you know, as I was out there reading stuff and trial and error on myself, and as I was coaching high school football, I just want to be able to cut out a lot of those frustrating missteps for other people. You know, and we've talked plenty about what makes an expert and you know how consumers of information of products should be critically thinking about why they're listening to someone or if that person's worth listening to and the information that they're being presented with. But there'll always be kind of an inherent flaw of educating through the internet. And it's that people can jump in at any level they want. They can, you know, you may be newer to the Juggernaut YouTube and JTSstrength.com and read some of the articles now and feel a bit lost with it if you don't have the the kind of prerequisites to things. So that's why I'm always trying to make a more systematic approach to the content. Why we do series like Squat Pillars and you know this kind of current series of how to find your MRV, how to find your frequency, you know, all those ideas, because one video or one article builds on the other, just like, you know, you go to school, and if you just showed up, you know, if you skipped the first month of class and then showed up, of course you'd have no fucking idea what was going on. So we're, you know, just trying to be more systematic about that, as always, trying to be descriptive rather than prescriptive, and give you the principles. Though I do, you know, with things like the program design manual, trying to bridge that gap between just principles or just prepackaged programs, but, you know, explain the principles and then say, hey, here is a program that was written for this theoretical situation because of this reason, this reason, this reason, and this reason. Yeah, because it's frustrating to me as someone who was there 7-8 years ago, you know, 7 to 10 years ago, really, being presented with information that I thought was the best thing, and then realizing, like, oh, this wasn't really for what I thought, or I wasn't equipped with the understanding of and the ability to understand what it was and what it wasn't. And, you know, I see some people now going through that same stage and not knowing they're in it. I didn't know that I was in it, but I know they're I know now that they're in it, and just wanting to kind of give them a better way.
I don't think there's any other group I've seen anywhere, including top foreign coaches, even other people's books. There's a couple of decent books that I would say do a fairly sort of okay job of literally bridging the gap between theory and practice. And that's like, you know, Chad taking the scientific principles of training and explaining the process by which you use those and you apply those principles to actually create a program. And in addition to that, every decision along the way can be explained and either related back to principle in that it applies to the principle, or related back to experience in that, you know, this is my personal experience. This will work this way. You know, there is literally an answer for every single question that's asked. And the fact that I guarantee you there's no one else that I can think of that is in that level where Juggernaut is, the ability to actually explain principles, process, then actually have a program at the end, the three P's.
Three P's. How many P's are we up to this episode?
Eight P's now, I believe.
Eight P's.
It's a lot of P's in this program. 2019, the year of the P. But yeah, I think that's the big one. That's, you know, for me, 2019, super awesome. You know, excited for the idea of really doing something and applying all of that stuff that I've learned and the things I've learned from Chad and from Mike and these guys. Like, that's the big goal for me for 2019 is to start really putting into practice those things and having the tools to do that. You know, the power of the AI programming is one that gives us a tool that would not normally be accessible, you know, the ability to record that much data and do something real with it. So,
yeah. So I think kind of to summarize, in 2019, we want to be better coaches, readying a number of athletes in powerlifting and weightlifting for historic performances. I mean, yep. IPF World Championships, you know, some of the biggest totals ever, people chasing Olympic spots, you know, all the way down to people who are trying to make PRs just trying to do their first meet or make their PRs at their second meet or whatever it is that we want to achieve that better. And that people, we want to help educate people more effectively to be able to reach those goals in the short term, in the long term, to equip them with understanding where they can help, other people as well. And then I guess we'll have some fun. We'll have some fun along the way.
The final P, parodies.
the most important P. It's been a bit since we've had a good new parody.
Heavy Ducks was underappreciated.
It was underappreciated by those, its time.
By those who do, I'm sure they truly appreciate the artistic quality of that film.
You know, and that's the thing when it comes to our parodies, our references. They're not for everyone. They're not, you know, they're not cheap laughs. we could just do shitty memes, not great memes like the meme pages that do the Lord's work. I'm talking about shitty memes like a United Lifters type of situation. We could do shitty memes for cheap laughs. We could have, you know, videos of people hitting themselves in the nuts with barbells. Oh, I have posted one of those before, that belt squat.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
well, that's pretty funny. But no, we like the deep cuts, the deep references.
Yeah.
And some people might have watched something like Heavy Ducks and been like, what the fuck is wrong with these guys? Why did they waste their time creating this? But other people may have been like, wow, that was an intricate web explaining the overlapping universes of several cinematic classics. And it is for you, the person who appreciates the depth of our references, that we do it. Not to make 100 people chuckle, guffaw. No, it is to make the one, the chosen one, piss his or her pants with laughter. So to you, I salute you.
Drops the mic.
All right. Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, Facebook, or you can email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
All right. Make sure to subscribe to the YouTube, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice. We always appreciate that. Helps more people find the show. And check out all of our online coaching offerings at jtsstrength.com. Clinics, this will come out very early. I'm all over the place. This year, registration is available for clinics in Oakland in January, Salt Lake City in February, Athens, Georgia in March, Albuquerque, New Mexico in April, Indianapolis, Indiana in May, and Long Island, New York in June. After that, still to be announced, still, you know, registration TBD. Will be events in Southern California, in Boston, in Texas, and in Brazil. So be on the lookout for those. You can get CEUs for the NSCA at my events. Learn about program design, improve your technique in the squat, bench, and deadlift. It's a good old time. And in the vein of trying to better educate, I've put together some pretty substantial kind of prerequisite information, because something I'm always surprised by at clinics, you know, when I ask, well, who's read Scientific Principles or who's watched this video, that like a third of the people will raise their hand. So I've made your job a little bit easier and put all of that kind of valuable pre-existing free information into one place for the clinic attendees, so you can show up better prepared for what I'm going to talk about, make sure we're speaking the same language, you can have better questions coming in, and then a pretty in-depth debriefing packet that I put together as well.
I have seminars coming up in the end of January in Ansbach, Germany at CrossFit 91522. And then the next weekend, in early February, I think 2nd, in Tyrone, Ireland. It's in Northern Ireland.
Northern Ireland.
At Agogi Strength and Conditioning. So those will be a weightlifting, powerlifting, and then super total in Ireland.
I've forewarned you about the Irish...
The Irish road system?
Yes, the Irish address system, or lack thereof.
Yes, I am fully aware of that, and my extraordinary driving skills are... Although I was offered... Someone has from Ireland has already reached out and offered me the benefit of having of taking me around and driving me.
I would suggest it. I would suggest it. So, yeah, follow me at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram. Let us know what your 2019 goals are in the comments of this. And thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.